Jump shot. It's good. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome into the Tuesday edition of Locked On Grizzlies. As always, Amari Sankofa from The Athletic joining us today. All the way out from beautiful LA. I'm sure it's much better than it is in Memphis, where it's rainy still for seems like the past 4 days for a while there with no rain and now so much rain. Either way, Mari, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's going on, man? Yeah, it's pretty nice out here. You know, I don't know how much it rains in LA, but you know, it's certainly been beautiful so far in the time I've been here. So just hoping that holds up.
Yeah, it doesn't rain much. I don't think it's I've been out there. We were talking about it before we recorded. I go there out there quite a bit. And then it's already maybe once in the 8 times I've been there or something like that. It's crazy. Either way, the Grizzlies played an instant classic on Sunday. I wasn't there because I was with my family at Zubu from the Memphis Zoo, and they were getting treats and candy and whatnot. I ended up watching the game late. Was it as insane of a game being there as it came across on TV? Because it just seemed – I remember watching the game, and I only saw one notification come across my phone. I only read it, and it just said, thrilling finish. And I was like, that's – all right, I can deal with that. And then I'm rewatching the game, and like two minutes ago, they're down 8 points. And I just thought, I don't know how this is going to be a thrilling finish. But was it as fun being there as it was watching?
Yeah, I mean, it was probably the best game I've covered at FedEx Forum, since I took this job a year ago. I mean, the atmosphere was electric. I mean, Ja obviously was incredible, you know, for him to have his breakout game, 30 points, 9 assists, 3 games into his NBA career. I mean, that just doesn't happen. I mean, when he's the third point guard after Trae Young and Isaiah Thomas, Pistons Isaiah Thomas, not Boston Isaiah Thomas, too. Do that within the first 3 games. So that's obviously pretty special company. And I mean, it was just absolutely incredible in there. You know, like that was the most engaged I've seen, the fans at FedEx Forum, probably, you know, period in the past year. And last season didn't give fans too many reasons to get up out their seats, obviously. So it was pretty special to see.
You mentioned Ja Morant. I want to talk about him right off the top. Obviously my show yesterday was called Ja Morant Upgraded Superstar. I'm fully aware that he is not a bona fide superstar in the league, and one game does not make that. I'm aware. It's all tongue in cheek, but it's certainly fun to watch him play. What are your takeaways from Ja in the first 3 games? I mean, it is difficult to do that, especially against a Kyrie Irving. Like, I wondered out loud what he would be like against elite point guard, and I'd say I think Kyrie Irving is probably the most talented, just pure talent. The most talented point guard in the league, like just as far as handles, just pure talent, I think is the best there is. And that's probably up for debate, and that's not what we're here to do. But what do you make of Ja Morant in his first 3 games? Had struggled in the first two, but came out with that. I mean, came out against Kyrie in the Nets, just blazing.
It's kind of like the light turned on for Ja. At the beginning of the fourth, he, you know, started attacking immediately. Of course, he had 17 in the fourth. And I think an issue for him the first 2 games, and really through preseason as well, is that, you know, he didn't really have a lot of confidence in his ability as a scorer. Yeah, and you saw him get a little more comfortable, you know, from game to game. But, you know, he's passed up open layups. You know, he just didn't seem to really trust his ability to score over, you know, like maybe taking a chance on one of his teammates hitting an outside shot. And, right. Sunday night, he basically just said, all right, you know, like, we can't lose another game in the fourth. You know, like, this has got to be B. What do you know? You know, point guard who is very athletic and very fast could usually blow by most defenders, and he seems to have realized that. And you know, he had a little bit more, you know, I guess gusto to his finishes. You know, he was jumping a little bit earlier, and like, you know, even at Murray State, he was a great finisher. You know, like very creative finisher, and he definitely tapped into that against the Nets. You know, it just really for him, it seemed to come together, and from the standpoint of him realizing how good he actually is. You know, he is usually the fastest player on the court. He's usually one of the most athletic. He's usually the best, one of the best ball handlers. And he applied those things toward actually scoring rather than trying to set his teammates up, because the Grizzlies have not been able to shoot at all. And, you know, this thing marked a moment for him where he realizes, you know, I really should be trying to score, you know, 20 plus every night if we need a chance to win, which I think he needs to do.
Yeah, there was a point late in the fourth quarter. I don't remember exactly the exact play, but it was you could just see a light bulb just a click that he realized that he sized up a defender, looked at him, and it was the play that he went straight to the basket, and then we started to kind of pump the crowd after he got to the basket. I mean, he just looked him up and down and knew exactly what he was going to do. There was no pick and roll. It was, I'm going to go by you because I'm quicker and better than you. And that right there, if you can get Ja and Jaren, both of them, to realize that, hey, I'm better than 90% of the people on the court most of the time. If you can get them to realize that all the time, that's a scary prospect.
No, I mean, it really is. You know, those are two guys who, you know, really defensive struggle to kind of stay in front of them. And, you know, we saw Jaren as well. Early on, you know, I think foul trouble kind of took him out the game late, but he kind of, you know, was getting his ball handling going too, and he was getting to the rim. And obviously he had, 27-10 or 23-10, something like that, against the Bulls Friday.
Yeah.
So these are two guys who really need to have that alpha dog mentality, that, you know, when I'm on the court, you know, I'm going to lead my team to victory mentality. They should be the two best scorers on the team, you know, quite frankly, you know, followed closely by Jonas Valanciunas, you know, who's still on a minute restriction, and that's hurt the Grizzlies, of course. But, yeah, you know, it all starts with John Jaren, and I think through three games we have seen them take steps forward as far as embracing that identity.
Yeah, there should never be a time where either Ja or Jaren's not taking the most shots on the court. Agree?
No, absolutely. And the Grizzlies also need to do a better job of feeding Jaren, because, you know, he's not going to pout or assert himself if he's not getting shots. And, you know, and honestly, he probably should learn how to do that, because, you know, he had 10 points in the first, and then he barely even took a shot in the second quarter. You know, and that just can't happen.
No, he should absolutely learn how to be do a Zach Randolph and just walk over and be like, hey, you got to get me the ball, because this guy's guarding me is terrible and he's trash and I got him. He's just not the type of guy to do that. I really don't think he's just from talking to me around him, he's not the type of guy to go and demand that you give him the ball. But there's a certain way that you can go about this and just say, hey, look, I have a good matchup. Let's give me the ball. Let me go at this dude without being demanding that you do it right away. Like there's a certain tactful way to do those type of things that he's got to learn how to do, just as a leader of the team. Say, hey, look, we got to get this. We got to get involved here with the defensive matches they're giving me. Let's take a quick break. We'll come right back. We'll talk more with Amari Sankofa from The Athletic. Welcome back to the show, talking with Amari Sankofa like we do every single Tuesday of the season from The Athletic. We're finished up talking about Jaren and Ja in that first segment. And I mean, again, like I just talked about at the end there, Jaren's got to learn how to be assertive. You said it. And I think everybody's probably saying it on all the shows and podcasts and writing and all that stuff. But the other underlying, I guess, thread here is the wings on this team. We saw, you know, Dylan Brooks really struggled in the first couple games defensively. It was better in the Nets game. He played a little more within the offense. But the big thing of note is that Solomon Hill got that call after Marco Gudrich kind of got the hook early in the game, and he played out the rest of the game. Thoughts on Solomon? I mean, I can't imagine that this is going to be the long-term, even for this year, long-term solution at the wing.
No, I don't think it will be. I think I said last week that I do like Dylan Brooks as a player. You know, and I do think that he is still the best wing on the roster. We've seen him have the best games of that unit so far. And, you know, I also think he's the best defender. You know, that said, I think Dylan is slightly overmatched as a starter. I think he's a guy that's going to bring off the bench for 18, 20 minutes a game, you know, and he can give you obviously a pretty good level of defense and shooting. But as a starter, you know, we see him, if he can't get it rolling early, he begins to press and, you know, take shots away from other guys. And you just don't really need that in your starting lineup. It's okay to press in the second unit if you're able to get it going, because second units obviously, you know, generally need more scoring and there's more shots to go around. But this wing rotation definitely needs some sort of upgrade, which I don't think they need to, you know, fill this season necessarily. I've had people ask me, who should they trade for? And the answer is nobody. You know, they're not trying to win a ring. But something needs to be done, you know, of course, and maybe that's an internal improvement from Marco or Grayson or maybe D'Anthony Melton, you know, a guy that I like a lot, you know, can emerge as that second wing that they need.
What did your overall thoughts on Marco Goodrich? I mean, he got the hook early, but I mean, my only takeaway from Marco so far this season is his indecision and inability to make decisions quickly, whether that's passing, shooting, you know, driving. He just, the ball just seemed to stop with him on the court.
Yeah, I think he's still pretty clearly adapting to the pace of the NBA game. We saw him play pretty well against Miami. I thought he had a nice game against the Bulls. You know, he's a really kind of nifty, honestly very kind of, you know, traditional European finisher where he's very herky-jerky and he can get his shot off even if he's not quite the quickest guy at getting it off. You know, his shot, you know, really hasn't been there yet. And like you said, the decision-making needs to be a little bit faster, you know, especially on this group where they've been one of the fastest paced teams in the league, you know, which is what Taylor Jenkins wants. You can't really afford to have the ball stop like that. So I think he's been better than Grayson at the very least. But, you know, I also think him getting the early hook against the Nets was, I mean, Solomon Hill had a great game, you know, and I don't know if you can necessarily count on Solomon to play as well as he did on Sunday every single night. So, you know, I think I still expect Marco to have a pretty significant role going forward.
What about tonight against the Lakers? Do you expect Solomon Hill to be the first guy off the bench with Tyus Jones?
You know, I'm curious to see that. You know, I think obviously the Lakers present a lot of difficult matchups, obviously, when you have two top five guys in Anthony Davis and LeBron. And, you know, I definitely want to see what Jenkins does as far as, you know, trying to, you know, slow LeBron down a little bit, which, you know, I know you can't do it, but Jenkins still has to try. And Solomon Hill, I guess on paper, seems like a guy who would have more success doing that than Marco or Grayson. And, you know, I also think Brandon Clark maybe is a guy who struggled on Sunday but could have a bounce back game today just given his, you know, defensive ability against opposing wings. But, yeah, you know, just defensively at least, I think Solomon Hill is a clear step above most of the wings on the roster outside of Dylan Brooks. And, you know, if you're not going to get scoring, you know, at the very least you can get defense. And I think you get that from Hill.
I think you're right. I guess LeBron James is such, like you mentioned, two top guys, LeBron James and Anthony Davis tonight as a take on the Lakers. Is it a situation where they have Kyle Anderson play more on LeBron when he's in there? Or what do you think they do with LeBron? I mean, I think you start with Jonas on Anthony Davis. I think that's probably fair. I don't know if you want to start with Jaren on Anthony Davis, although I think at some point he's going to have to play on him as well. But LeBron, I mean, is it Kyle Anderson? Is it, you think Dylan? I just don't know who guards LeBron James? And obviously, that's a loaded question because the real answer is not many people. You know, maybe Kawhi Leonard. There's very few people that can do it effectively. But just for the sake of the Grizzlies tonight, who probably gets that matchup? And obviously, I don't know if it goes well for them, but who do you think that gets that matchup?
Yeah, I think Kyle Anderson will have a pretty big role in defending LeBron. Kyle is obviously one of the better defenders on the team. And he's also been getting to the rim very well since the season started. I mean, he's been one of the best guys off the bench So I think Kyle certainly is a pretty straightforward choice there. You know, and then you also have in some combination Brennan Clark and then Dylan Brooks. You know, he may get a shot. Obviously, he's 6'6". You know, like Jay Crowder, you know, I think could be a guy who's matched up against LeBron. And I'm forgetting somebody. And Brennan Clark as well. You know, they have a lot of wings sort of within that 6'6", 6'9", range who, you probably want to rotate, you know, in case one guy picks up a couple of fouls. They all have their strengths and weaknesses. But, I mean, compared to last year, they actually have a good amount of guys who I think can have at least a chance at doing something against LeBron.
I think the real answer is several people. I think you're right at the end. Like, I think it's going to take several people will get in foul. You know, I think people will get in foul trouble. LeBron's just, he's so smart and he's one of the best, he's obviously one of the best players in the world. So that will be interesting to see what they do there defensively. Let's take one more quick break. We'll come back and wrap up with Morrison Cofer from the Athletic. Welcome back to the show, talking with Amari Sankofa from The Athletic on today's show, like we do every single Tuesday. I want to finish up with this Lakers game and then get into some stuff about Josh Jackson, just because you talked to him yesterday as well at the media availability. I got a couple questions on Josh Jackson yesterday. But again, I want to wrap up with the Lakers. I mentioned that Jonas Valanciunas playing Anthony Davis defensively to start out with. Do you think that's probably the best for them, or do you think that Jaren should play Anthony Davis and try to get accustomed to playing bigger guys, more, you know, guys that are just as good as him in the league?
I think you probably want to start off with Jonas, you know, simply because Jaren, you know, the fouls have still been an issue for him, and Davis is just so physical that you can see that type of matchup that Jaren would kind of struggle against. So I think Jonas, you know, you kind of warm him down there, absorbing some contact and making life difficult, you know, and then you can match Jaren on, you know, I believe Dwight's starting for them at this point, you know, and I think Jaren against Dwight probably makes a little bit more sense because, you know, it keeps Jaren inside and Dwight's not a huge post-up threat. So, you know, you don't have to worry about Jaren's arms kind of dangling out, picking up an errant foul, which seems to happen 3 times a game.
Right.
So, I think Jonas is certainly the guy there.
The Grizzlies' chances on beating the Lakers tonight. The Lakers are 2-1. They obviously, like you mentioned, they have Dwight Howard. They have Anthony Davis, LeBron James. They have, you know, that, but beyond that, Rajon Rondo is not playing. Kyle Kuzma's not playing. Chances of the Grizzlies actually getting this game tonight?
I would say still slim. Only because this Grizzlies team, like we've seen them. You know, still kind of struggle in the sense of, you know, they make a lot of just young team mistakes. You know, I think the Lakers have so many veterans that there would just be an inherent advantage there.
Right.
Not to mention, obviously, you know, they have the two best players on the floor by a pretty significant margin in LeBron James and Anthony Davis. You know, with that said, the Grizzlies did pull off a clutch win over the Lakers last year, back in December. And as I'm sure you remember, that was a game that where Jaren Jackson actually, the game clinching step back three,
yes,
over LeBron, you know, and that was obviously probably the biggest moment of the season for Jaren, you know, other than, of course, when he like went completely crazy against the Nets and kind of single-handedly won that game for them, last November. But I think the Grizzlies, you know, like if things click for them, like they clicked on Sunday and they can hit threes and Ja has another aggressive game, I think they can keep it close. But overall, I think that talent gap is just too much to make up for.
Yeah, I think I'll be very interested to see in how they play defensively against Ja Morant. We talked about this against the Bulls, but the Bulls really blitzed that high pick and roll with Ja, forced him into making decisions early and quickly. They even shaded a couple defenders in the lane on those pick and rolls. It was really effective against John Morant. I thought that would be something teams take notice of, a way, you know, the way making him make decisions very quickly and very early on. But the Nets didn't do that. The Nets played him straight up pick and roll. And obviously John Morant took advantage of that. He was very good against the Nets, just playing straight up one-on-one. So I'll be very interested in see how the Lakers go about playing Ja Morant, just because we've seen a couple different styles. One's worked, one hasn't, and it makes sense with the way one worked was because they forced a young point guard to make very, very quick decisions and putting two guys on him right away, and he wasn't able to whip his head around, pass the ball, or split defenders. So that's something that I'll be interested to see what they do tonight as well. Before we get out of here, let's talk about Josh Jackson. I got a couple questions on him yesterday in the Monday mailbag. First of all, there was a quote yesterday, I believe I saw it from Peter Adamson at first, but everybody was there. I think Peter asked him about the game plan for, I guess, the game plan that the front office gave him. And he said there was no, or he didn't know how to answer it, or whatever the quote was. I took it as he seemed to know the plan, but he was smart enough to understand not to say said plan out loud, or they told him, hey, let's keep this internal. What was your takeaway from the way he answered that?
He was certainly playing it close to the vest. I would be very surprised if the Grizzlies don't have a plan, slash timeline in place for him, and, maybe a series of benchmarks to meet just to get him back with the Grizzlies, because if there's no plan in place and he's just supposed to hustle, then, what's even the point? Why not just cut him if you don't think that he should be with the actual team? So he was certainly playing it close to the vest. He seems to be in good spirits. I guess only he knows how he truly feels about the situation.
Right.
But the way he handled the interview leads me to believe that he knows that, not to sound, too harsh on the hustle, because it's a great thing, a great opportunity, but he knows that better days are ahead for him. I don't think, former top five pick necessarily wants to do that. So the fact that he handled the interview so well, to me, tells me that he knows that it's something that's temporary.
Yeah, it definitely felt like he knew what was going on. He just chose wisely, I might add, to not divulge any information about what their internal conversations were. The couple questions I kept getting, obviously, I think you probably get the same thing, is people want to see Josh Jackson. There's a lot of talk about him, him being on the hustle. A lot of people see what he did in Phoenix and scored on a bad team. What do you make of getting Josh Jackson on the main squad into the rotation? Does it matter to you? Do you think it's going to help? Or do you think it's just a process for them to get through? I mean, my answer was yesterday was clearly the internal staff, the current office, sees a lot more Josh Jackson than we do. And for a wing rotation that could maybe use another some more scoring, clearly if he's at the hustle, to me, it's for very good reason. But I'm curious to think what you think of that.
Yeah, I mean, I still think Josh Jackson has a lot to offer. Phoenix didn't have the greatest infrastructure for him to develop and, begin to deliver on his potential, especially given that he may not necessarily be an on-ball guy. He may be a guy that needs to be traded for, and that's absolutely fine, if you have a point guard who can't create. And the Grizzlies have that now in two guys, with Ja Morant and Tyus Jones, who's been a very good backup. And this team, as you mentioned, is also short on talented wings. It's a team that could use maybe another jolt of athleticism beyond Ja. Josh Jackson gives you those things. If he can play adequate defense, we can knock down open threes. We're talking about one of the best wings in the roster already, given that Dylan Brooks seems to be the only guy who can do both consistently, and even he hasn't been doing it consistently. So there's certainly an opportunity for Josh Jackson to kind of have a breakout year, assuming he does end up with the Grizzlies. And in my mind, that should absolutely happen. And, assuming he, stays clean, stays out of trouble, I think he can have a good year ahead of him.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if it will hurt. You know what I mean? If you put Josh Jackson in the lineup with this Grizzlies team, I'm not sure it hurts you that much. I mean, you mentioned they do need more wings, more scoring. So I don't know. It's interesting to see that the way they have gone about it, assigning him to the G League and clearly making benchmarks for him to get back to the main squad, as Zach Kleiman told us all on media day. So it's a definitely interesting position for Josh and the team to be in. But the Grizzlies take on the Los Angeles Lakers tonight. Again, it's a late night for all of us in the Central Time Zone. Mario will be there. He'll talk to the players after the game. So if you need any if you see any quotes, anything like that stuff, just follow Mario on Twitter. He'll have an article, I'm sure, about it later tonight over at The Athletic. So if you're not already subscribed to The Athletic, go and do so. It's very cheap. And I think I saw you guys are running like a 40% off sale. Is that right? Did I see that right?
Yeah, we are 40% off. I think you end up getting it for like 40 for the whole year or something like that, which of course is a pretty significant discount. So certainly something that people should take advantage of.
It's easy, smart decision. It's cheap. Make sure you guys go do that. Also, if you're not already subscribed to the podcast, make sure you go do so. Whatever podcast platform that you choose, Spotify, Stitcher, or any of the, they're all out there. Just go subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode every single day. Amari will be back with us next Tuesday to talk more Grizzlies basketball. Thanks, man.
Hey, have a good one, Mark. Thanks.